Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and I host this show. My guest this evening is Carol Gino, RN and MA. Carol is a nurse, author, and teacher, and has been for many years. Carol wrote the books The Nurse's Story, Rusty's Story, and Then an Angel Came. She has won numerous awards for these books. The Nurse's Story is now a screenplay. Carol has a vision for bringing nurses together in on an online venue. As I mentioned last week on a special edition to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom with the yoga nurse, that nurses feel better when they support each other and stay closely aligned with one another, because after all, it's really hard to understand us like another nurse can understand us. I think Carol would agree with that. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Carol Gino. Hello, dear Carol.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I am good. So do you agree that nurses feel better when we can communicate and stay closely aligned with one another?
I think it's something that's really necessary for us to do if we're going to be effective as healers. And in the healthcare system that we have now, I think that where the patient's hope for healing, turned too much from a healing model to a business model, and therefore we have to manage somehow to remember that the gifts that are inherent in all of us and the intention we had when we went into nursing is what is part of what allows us to be healers.
Yeah. Yes, we are healers, and I think a lot of us need to be reminded that is what we are and who we are and how we can be most effective as nurses.
Well, I think part of what it is there's a great reverence for the science of medicine and a little too little reverence for the art, whether you're a doctor or a nurse. But the studies that have been done in the last bunch of years on healing through energy, through hands-on, through visualization, through intention, hopefully will have us move as nurses at the bedside into healers, as many other cultures have already acknowledged.
Right.
I think that part of the problem is that the economics have determined our role, and we've somehow changed or accepted the profession of nursing rather than the vocation. Not that we have to choose, but that both should be acknowledged as being important parts of healing, so that the nurses at the bedside should be as important in a healthcare system as the nurses who have degrees. I'm a great lover in education. I mean, I always wanted to have a lot of letters after my name, like alphabet soup, for whatever reason, like Scrabble. But I really enjoyed the time I spent at the bedside much more than I did many of the other things. I enjoyed direct patient contact, and I was able to see the kind of healing that could be accomplished when I went in with the intention of making them less afraid and helping them. And it was my desire to help them that automatically resulted in my wanting to learn more about what it was that disease did to a body, what it did to a soul, what it did to a spirit.
And what I always find is what resilient attitude can do to the disease process in turning it around.
I think part of what it is we've all settled for being so much less than we truly are as human beings. And I think that once we can begin to dialogue with ourselves, you know, we've been told all along that talking to ourselves is not a good thing. I disagree. Several of the illnesses that I had pushed me into a place of a spiritual emergence or emergency, whichever. In 86, I had an aneurysm or some kind of a brain bleed, as the doctor put it. The neurologist said something happened. And during that time, I have to tell you, I got more information than I did all along, because once my mind was shut down, I was able then to hear the voice of my soul. And every once in a while, you know, when you fall madly in love or when somebody really dear to you, when you lose them, you know your soul has a voice of its own. And
yes,
it's that voice that can lead us as human beings to path and purpose.
Yeah.
And I think that unless we begin to evolve as human beings and as nurses and healers, to begin to accept, acknowledge, and incorporate those aspects of ourselves will allow the business of medicine, the system, the savage god of science to keep us held back rather than to be able to accomplish what we all can.
Well, when you think about it, the business and the science, getting back to the business of medicine, if nurses owned their power as healers, the cost of medicine would astronomically fall, would decline, because of we would be using modalities that heal, and people, our patients would feel this empowerment. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm an advocate of integrative medicine, so that we use every tool that we have. If a person does need surgery, et cetera, then by all means. But then when we use our healing abilities on with our patients, because it is a flowing back and forth, the patient will heal so much faster.
Well, I think that that's true, and I think that the one of the big obstacles or challenges for us in this is that, again, and I'm not laying this on women alone, but I'm saying that to team, for every one of us who gets a degree, if we could turn and look at those nurses at the bedside and share, if we could all share what the other has to give. It's been the devaluing of, if you will, mother, caretaking, nurturance. It's been the minimizing of that in our society all along, because it is a patriarchal society, that has devalued the feminine aspect, whether in men or women. And I think we're going to be able to find out soon that that's the aspect that does the creative healing in a lot of ways. And when you're sick and when you're frightened and when you're vulnerable, you do need someone to turn to you and say to you, I'll help, I'll make better, I'll comfort. It's minimized so much now. And the same as when germs were unable to be seen, nobody knew how much they caused disease. Right now, I don't think we yet have found the enormity of how much intention and imagery and healing travels on that energy from the interaction between the caretaker and the patient.
Right. So because we can't see it.
Right.
Even though
we imagine it doesn't exist. We can't see love, and yet we can feel it. We can feel someone who cares about us and is concerned about us. And even in the difficulties of the business environment today, where I don't think for a minute that nurses at the desk don't have to give up something because they're inundated in paperwork rather than being there to hear all the thank yous of the patients and stuff like that. I do believe that bedside nurses, desktop nurses, and I know everybody laughs at me when I call them desktop nurses, but and policymaking nurses all have to acknowledge what each of them brings to the table so that we can all empower each other. And I think we need to team. Once we're a team, there are so many of us that there's no group that will be more powerful as we will. We're the most important link in the healthcare system, but we're not standing up, speaking up for our own strength. Otherwise, healthcare wouldn't be as it is.
That's right. I believe that the greatest policy making nurses that I know of are the California nurses. Are you familiar with how they are working so diligently to get single payer, as mm-hmm. we talked about on the phone last night, single payer legislation passed in California? And of course, once it passes in one state, it will go like wildfire from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Jerry Brown is the governor of California, he will undoubtedly pass it, but then it's very close to passing in Vermont. So on either side of the country here, we have some really powerful ways of changing the healthcare system, and nurses need to get involved in that whole aspect of policy, because that is the thing that will save the country a lot of money. It's the kind of thing that we will see our patients being taken care of.
Part of the problem is that I found, even when I was touring and going from city to city, one of the things I found is that nurses are afraid to speak up because they're afraid of losing their jobs, and it's certainly in the economy the way it is now. I don't know, there's not an organization that has our back the way,
mm-hmm.
The AMA did stand behind doctors and does. The union workers who are considered non-professionals have somebody to help cover them. But we're right in the middle of that. And so if we don't support each other, if we don't acknowledge and stand together, I'm thinking that instead of only the patient-to-nurse ratio, they probably should have a nurse-to-paperwork ratio to find out how much time nurses spend on paperwork and how much time they spend doing patient care. Because otherwise, all the things we've learned, they teach us how to educate, how to do counseling, how to help our patients, and yet the very immensity of the amount of work we have to do keeps us from being with the patients who need us most.
Yes, we do need to have more time with our patients, and that is the most important thing.
Well, one of the great things that the Internet offers us, and that's why I just set up a site on Facebook, and I have my own web site, too, called Revolutionary Nurse, where I'm hoping that all nurses will come in and just, if every nurse came in and said one thing that they could give, one bit of information that they could give to patients that would help inform patients so they could make a more informed decision and be more accountable for their health care. But right now what we say to them is they have to take responsibility, but we're asking them to take responsibility without any of the information.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the ones who generally acted as a bridge, but for too many years we said, ask the doctor. And right now I think it's important for us to share our information so that acting as advocates and as bridges between patients and the healthcare system, we can help arm them so that they can take responsibility and be accountable for some of their decisions.
Yeah, I see that in maternal medicine as an OBGYN or
mm-hmm.
as a labor nurse. So many times women don't know what. They are not armed with the information. They don't have informed decision making. They do think that the doctor knows best. Well, the doctor often does not have the patient's best interest at heart. Now, not always, because there are times when we have to rush off to the operating room. That's a given. But there are other times when it's not entirely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the patient is often afraid. And doesn't know how she can advocate for herself, and I think
it's an overwhelming amount of information. If you look at how long it took us to get that information, people, especially when they're frightened and they're feeling vulnerable, don't feel in control. I'm hoping that Nurse Up for Healing, that team site that I'm trying to set up, to offer nurses some kind of way to share what they give and what they give up in whatever situation they're in, will allow us to begin to see what policy-making nurses do, what bedside nurses do, what nurses at the desk do that they feel impacts the wellness or the ability to help heal their patients.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's always God. You know,
and the angels,
certainly. Yeah. God, they helped me a lot. I would say that if you get into a life and death battle, you're arm wrestling with God, it isn't going to work. But if you're there to care for, you can offer whatever you have, and whatever you have is good enough. Once you go into a patient's room and just tell them your name so they feel that they have a connection, once you ask their name, once you touch them,
mm-hmm.
they feel safer, and it's much easier to heal from a love vibration than it is when you're frightened to death.
Oh, my heavens, yes. Well, we actually have somebody on the line here, so let me just bring them on and see if they have something to say. Hi there. Hello. This is a 904 area code. Or are you just listening?
Maybe they're on mute.
I had just unmuted them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that if you are interested in talking, press 1 on your telephone. Anyway,
right.
I will put this person back on mute.
Right, and let's see. She might have stepped away for a moment.
Yes, that's fine. I can try that again.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that what you're talking about is so important, that all the different types of nurses need to align themselves with each other, as opposed to especially the administrative nurses tend to, or the management types tend to think that they are better than the bedside nurses.
That whole science is better than nurturing thing again. And I do believe that we are going to come up with more and more studies that will show eventually. I mean, I've read a bunch of medical studies that show that healing is done with, aside from the therapeutic touch, healing, hands-on stuff that Dee Krieger did and everything, I'm talking about the latest studies that show that when staffing is low on a floor, more patients get sick. It'll wind up being that it may cost the hospitals more, and hopefully that breakdown will allow a breakthrough so that we can add some of the things that don't cost money, but that we can use ourselves for to help implement healing.
Yes, that's so true. It's a great idea.
You know, they have said, no little kids, you know, when they're little kids, and you know how little kids know the truth, no little kid wakes up and says, wow, would I like to be an administrator, or wow, would I like to keep notes at a desk, you know? So the truth of the healing is part of the healing archetype, of the hero archetype. And
yeah.
That doesn't mean we shouldn't be paid. That doesn't mean we should be completely selfless. But it does mean that we are there with a social contract where we are offering to take care of people when they're sick and vulnerable. That's why we're called healers. And the whole business of making it pathological, calling it codependence, saying we don't know how to build boundaries when what they're asking us to build is walls and to become less sensitive. I think all those things have to be examined and have to be examined in context so that they're not sitting making policy like Congress does, where it doesn't apply when you're on the floors, when you're working with real-life patients.
Mm-hmm.
If Congress said that they would accept the same choices, they'd give up their Cadillac plans, and they'd accept the same choices that the rest of us had to deal with, I would say, oh, wow, okay, I'll go with that. But the fact of the matter is that I doubt very much whether any of them have read their own healthcare plans. I don't think any of them know that the formularies are controlled and that the government is being charged much more than patient care. It's not the patients, it's the pharmaceutical houses. We have to know all of those things. But the only things we can do at this point in the stalemate that we exist in right now is we can try to remain informed. Americans for Healthcare Online is also very good. It's a good website. I'll put it on either my Hopeful Healer or Nurse Up or Revolutionary Nurse site. And
I can put it here in the chat room. What is it?
Okay, Americans for Healthcare.
Okay,
I'll get them to even contact you, Kate. So you can see, because they're really doing a good job. They're grassroots trying to. They want to make it like grassroots where they'll just march to Washington and try to tell them what's needed in healthcare, you know. But I really do believe that most of the Congress that's voting on healthcare doesn't really have a clue what it's about. I mean, forget the corruption and all that stuff if you can. I do think part of it comes from the not knowing. I mean, I don't know how many people have read the 5 pages they get in their health, you know, in their plans. So there is something that I found interesting, though, that I wanted to talk to you about. Before, we used to call it burnout. Or we used to call it, they called it compassion fatigue. And both those things drove me crazy because it always sounded like there was something about the nurse herself, whether it was like she was burned up like an old light bulb or whether it was compassion fatigue, like she had a limited amount. The American Association of Critical Care Nurses just came out with a statement that called what was previously called burnout, or is still
right.
Maybe, and this is just an overlay, moral distress, which one exhibits when you're ethically and morally compromised because you're forced to act in a manner that's contrary to your personal and professional values. And that undermines your integrity and authenticity. I think it's so much more important to understand that they shouldn't blame the quote-unquote victim, and I'm not trying to make a nurse a victim, but I am trying to say that all of us exist within a system, and those systems have to be changed as well as what we have to do for ourselves, you know?
Right, right.
You know, because
we figure that out
once they realize that once a nurse can barely meet the patient's basic needs, or they just drop out and leave the profession altogether because of all the emotional suffering and stuff, it will be costly.
Yeah, we were talking.
They may have to then come up with something else, you know?
Yeah, the whole idea of burnout, the whole idea of compassion fatigue, as we were saying last night, and then these terms do minimize our profession. Then you have the terminology of codependency. Nurses are codependent, as if you know what we're doing is somehow a lack instead of instead of what it is, you know.
I think what's going to happen, though, a defenseless defender is no good. I mean, I remember one time when I was working in a burn unit, and I remember this kid got up in the middle of the night, and he was supposed to go for surgery for grafting the following day, and he was certain he was going to die. He got up in the middle of the night, and he was rubbing his back against the wall, and it was a stucco wall. He was making such a mess of everything that I called the doctor. And I said to the doctor, "Doctor, this kid is really, you got to come down and see him. You got to give him something. You got to talk to him. He doesn't want to go to surgery. He says he's going to die." And the doctor said to me, "Hysterical patients don't need hysterical nurses." And at that time, I really, really knew that if it was another doctor calling, that he would have come down. And I thought to me, that kid did die, by the way, the next day.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Doctor then apologized profusely, which did neither of us any good.
So
I understand the importance of the profession of nursing being made to be more valued. But at the same time, I think we should all understand that while the profession is enhanced by all the degrees, it's not necessarily better for the patients if what they're going to do is take us away from the bedside and have somebody at the bedside who doesn't have the kind of training that we do.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, what is your book, The Nurse's Story, about?
Actually, this is another way that what it is I took myself and about four of my friends, and I incorporated all our stories into different smaller stories and then quilted them together, you know, to show the idealism of a young nurse who goes into nursing and then finds out the reality of nursing. I tried to show the toll it took on her personal life, the reason when she was fighting death, how it really cost her as well, and the obstacles that she had to face and what happened afterward as well, you know. But nurses themselves have phenomenal stories to tell. These stories should be out there. They're educational. They tell patients what to expect, you know, and what can happen. And it sold an awful lot of books. And I did it only because I was so frustrated with the fact that I just couldn't help enough people. They seemed like they were coming in on conveyor belts. And when I wrote the book, so many people bought it, and all the nurses in the trenches wrote to me and said their experiences were exactly like that. And I remember the night it hit the bestseller list, sitting in the bathtub and just crying while everybody was celebrating, all I kept thinking is, where were all these people when I was asking for help and telling them how difficult it was? Why is the picture I painted of nursing so much more touching than the real-life panoramic view of humanity that you get when you're up close with a patient, when that special something, that kind of intimacy that helps a patient and helps you understand your value as a human being, when that exists, it's looked over, it's passed over, it's just sort of taken for granted. Why is it that when it's written, it seems so touching, you know? It's like the Chilean miners. It's like the people, anytime we see heroism on television, anytime we see people caring about each other,
yes,
everybody is touched by the humanity of it. We have to be so careful that we as human beings don't allow that feeling we have for each other to be taken away from us,
mm-hmm,
by something not as real.
Yes, yes.
You know, because it is that caring that sometimes heals.
Well, I agree. I think mainly the more we care, caring is at the root of healing. And you can't, you know, my husband and I were talking about that today when somebody says, well, I don't care about something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true. We do care. And that's sort of like a cliche in American society. Well, I don't care. I don't care. Well, we do care, and we need to foster and integrate our caring into every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm hoping is that if we can give nurses their due, and even in small ways, if we can say to them, these are the things you can do in the same amount of time as it takes you to make rounds. If you can touch a patient, if you can give them your name, if you can take their name, if you can remember one special thing about them to ask, if you can reassure them that you'll be there if they have pain, and if you can make that a priority, and
mm-hmm,
if you can acknowledge when you're getting burned out or in moral distress, of course, we have to make that. We have to allow people to know more about that, and I'm hoping to be able to do more articles and stuff like that so that people don't feel bad or like a failure, you know. I mean, we're not saints, but we can be healers as long as we own the power we already have, and that's the power of the calling,
yeah,
you know, that we have to be nurses.
The moral distress that you talk about. How do you see when you first came up with that idea, how did you define it within yourself?
First of all, I was tickled to death because moral distress at least involves part of what I knew I felt when they used to put old people who I knew were dying in intensive care units. And I knew these people didn't have an honest expectation. The families didn't know. And I knew that if we could be honest with them, if we could tell them what really to expect, they could die at home comfortably with hospice, with other choices. Both my mother and father died at home, and they died well. And I think that what I felt was just the name moral distress is a deeper level of understanding than burnout or than compassion fatigue, which puts the onus of both those things on the nurse herself or himself. Moral distress implies that there's a conflict with another, and that context has to be the healthcare system, which is no longer a healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole idea, I think, then it sounds to me that the root of this moral distress would be a lack of honesty.
Oh, sure. It's a lack of communication. It's a lack of us being allowed to inform our patients, having the time to inform our patients, to be able to say to them, look, these are the choices you have to be able to tell your patients what their real choices are, what it costs, all that stuff. And if you can get them out of the fear space, if they honestly believe that you care about them, they will go with you with some of this stuff. A lot of cost can be cut down if we're not putting people in institutional settings where they can charge much more than they can if someone's at home.
Yes, I know.
Which gives patients and families at least the time to grieve. You know, the loss of their power, the loss of who they were to who they are, you know?
Yes.
So I think it's really important that nurses start trusting themselves and start believing that they can make a difference. I think they have to stop believing that they're powerless, and I think they have to acknowledge when it gets too painful, and we maybe have to start petitioning our policymakers, asking them who's watching our back, who's going to cover for us, who's going to change policy so that we at least can know what we can do to, and who's got our back at the time. A nurse shouldn't have to take complete responsibility for all the areas in the healthcare system.
I think in a lot of ways we do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and we shouldn't have to.
No.
It's Americans for Healthcare is the site on the and they're really good on online.
I have it up here, but it's taking me to a site at SEIU.org. Service Employees International.
It's Americans for Healthcare is, try it on Facebook and let's see. I don't know where they're. Link is. So on the Facebook page, we probably can get it, and I can get it for you tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay. This is the one I'll send you, you know? So I think that whatever we can do to talk to each other, to help each other, to allow us to speak and support each other, I think we're going to find that we have a lot more in common, no matter what kind of nursing we do, than what we have that's different, if we can be honest.
And like you said,
and I think that kind of authenticity is imperative, to feel valuable yourself, to feel like your life was worth something, and to be able to help a few people as you're doing life is so much better than all the things that are sort of happening right now, you know?
Yes. Well, what do you think? There's a lot of good things that don't really need to be changed in medicine, and I think that, do you have any ideas about what those things might be?
Well, I think probably one of the things that should be is that there should be, as I said, it shouldn't be only nurse-patient ratio. It should be nurse-paperwork ratio, because if nurses are at the desk covering for the insurance and healthcare companies, you're not going to get people who are going to have time to take care of their patients in the same way, you know? So I think that's one thing. I think administration I think it all begins, though, with us talking to our policymakers, to our nursing organizations, to make it clear to them that, no, we can't. It's almost as though we act like battered wives, like we're sort of afraid to stand up and say, hey, this is wrong. Where are you for me? You know, and again, because nurses generally have other lives to lead, you know, personal lives where they either are supporting their own children or they have to bring in money to help keep the families afloat and stuff, I think that they're torn and they're always trying to be more. I think that we need certainly more support groups. You know how on all the internet sites when you talk to nurses, it says, why do nurses eat their young, you know? And I'm thinking that older nurses, retired nurses, may be able to mentor some of the younger nurses to sort of remind them what's important, even in this changing society, so that they can keep what is valuable about being a human being. Because, you know, they're coming in with all kinds of technology and robots to do healing, but is that really going to work, or are we going to wind up being a society dependent on technology and mechanics, and what we're going to forget is the very thing that gave us soul, that made us human beings.
Right. And then there's always the nurse-doctor relationship. And in many ways, I think nurses do act like battered wives before a doctor, no matter whether the doctor is a woman or a man.
But I'm noticing that doctors, I've talked to several doctors lately, who are mourning the loss at technically efficient nurses and knowledgeable nurses at the bedside, because they're having to work 2-3 times as hard, because, you know, if somebody who doesn't know what's happening on an EKG calls a doctor and just says there's something wrong, he has to make a lot more time to get down there and see that patient. Now they have hospitalists instead of personal doctors working in hospitals, so that we're losing the connections between people. And it's that loss of connection that also causes the isolation, that causes more illness, you know? That may be an illness in itself.
I know. It's true that the experienced nurses are leaving at an exponential rate now. You know, the baby boomers are retiring in huge numbers, and we have the experience. And it would be a great idea to be mentors to women who are just coming in.
Sure.
I think that's a great idea.
The fact is that nurses, now the new policy is supposed to be, the new mandate is supposed to be that 80% of the nurses coming out should have bachelor's degrees. Now, bachelor's degrees can arm them, again, with the science, but does it arm them with team building, management, does it on them? I don't understand why they're not at the bedsides doing the counseling and stuff, and why there aren't medical secretaries at the desk.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You know? So I think that it's a big problem, but I think that in each day, if we can live in the moment and in the present, there is always time to bring comfort to another just by being yourself, just by being true, just by bringing your intention with you, by smiling at them and touching them so that they don't feel disgusting and invisible. There are small things that make very, very big differences.
I know. It's so true.
You know, and I don't know how often the young nurse is going in are taught that that's part of the deal of being able to help a person, that the person has to, that when you're snappy and when you're under stress and when you have too much to do, it's really the business of medicine that you should aim your distress at, not the patients, you know?
Right, right.
Because it's still a do-no-harm situation, you know?
Yes, yes, it is.
So that, I think, is what, and then obviously one of the things would be that a nurse has to care enough about herself to try to make time to take care of herself, because she herself can't give if she's used up.
Oh,
and
I know.
Just in little ways, just in affirmations about just trying to acknowledge that she is a special person for what she's giving to the world, for what she's giving to herself, for the way she cares. That's sort of special now. If you look around and you see the every man for himself or every woman for herself kind of thing, the wanting and needing to help another is in itself a gift.
Yes, it is. And that is what we have at our, that's how we can be with our patients and with each other, because nurses need to nurture each other. Not only must we love ourselves, but we must extend that nurturance to each other as nurses.
And as long as we're taught that if there's a patient dying and we have to act professional and that means we can't cry or whatever, those boundaries that we're supposed to keep turn into walls, and what they do is they separate us from each other. And I mean, a few tears certainly isn't going to hurt the patient to know that they're cared for enough, that they're worth, there are some things that are worth crying about, you know? So I just think that nursing is a wonderful gift, and I think it has to be valued. I think it has to be elevated to where it belongs, and I think as women, and we're mostly women, a lot of the men I've noticed, Kate, have gone on to be entrepreneurs, like some of the biggest sites online. If I look them up, they're either run by the organizations, the drug companies, or men.
Yes.
You know? And so I would say that it's time for us to claim our power and do something with it.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
So let's put our stories out there. Let's talk to each other. Let's talk to the people who are patients now, because certainly we should become the kind of nurses we'd want to have. And I just think that we need to be able to acknowledge our powerlessness, give it up to God when we can, but then do our part when we have to, so that we can help facilitate the healing of others just because they're other human beings and we care about them.
Yes. Carol, tell us about Rusty's story, your second book.
Rusty's story I wrote because I met a girl who was who had epilepsy, but she was misdiagnosed as being mentally ill. And I knew from the beginning, I could see the pattern of, she had temporal lobe seizures, so she didn't always have grand mal seizures. And when she was well, she was so different, and yet her family was poor. So they didn't have a way to break into the system with any kind of influence. And so she was locked away from the time she was 13 to about the time she was 19 when I met her. And I could see how special she was, you know. What I did then is, because I was so horrified and felt so responsible as part of medicine for having to give her life away like this, that I took her home to live with me, took a vote with the kids, and she wound up really being a terrific, terrific visionary, and it was really sort of amazing to be able to see from a different vantage point what the world looked like. And, you know, it's sort of like if you look out the window and you choose two things, and another person looks out the window and they see two things, forever on when you look out the window, you see four. And
yeah.
That's what her vision allowed me. We found a doctor who, after a good period of time, maybe 15 years, managed to see what I could see, and some of it was toxicity from drugs, some of it was bad doctors and not evolved enough medicine because of the brain. And what happened was she went on to be an alcohol counselor, and she's had a very effective life, you know, since mm-hmm. then. And I think it was important for us to, I got an award for that for National Epilepsy or American Epilepsy Society Book of the Month. And I went to be able to speak to 400 neurologists and psychologists and psychiatrists. And almost every one of them thanked me for putting a face on their diagnosis of epilepsy. But more important, the little kids that I saw were so grateful because it offered them the hope that they too could be heroes and live regular lives.
That is a beautiful story.
It was beautiful for me to be able to be a part of it.
Yes, because you acted upon your moral distress, knowing that she was being treated in a way that...
And it was quite amazing because, you know, as everybody warned me and worried about taking her home to live with me because I had two little kids at the time, like 4 and 9, when my daughter's baby died of sudden infant death, one of the things that she hung on tight to was that if Rusty could survive her life, then she knew she could survive hers because things would change.
Oh, my gosh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was, you never know what purpose any path has, you know, and I think you have to be open to it. I mean, I, as you know, talk to angels. In fact, I just am putting out a book now called There's an Angel in My Computer about, about how prayers are answered, you know. And I find that beauty is a great antidote to suffering, and I have a spirit who believes that she's my spirit of joy and happiness, you know, and that's an antidote for that, you know. She said it's time to turn in the crown of thorns for the crown of daisies, you know, and
yeah.
I think that we all have that ability to have that inner dialogue if we begin to trust it and stop worrying that we're going to fall off the edge of sanity, you know,
yes.
Because this world right now doesn't look terribly sane to me.
No. You know, when in your third book, Then an Angel Came, was that Rusty?
No. Rusty was my second book. The third book, Then an Angel Came, was about my grandson who died of SIDS.
I was just wondering, though, when you described how Rusty became your daughter's sort of angel, whether that was the angel that
this was truly... a visionary experience and stuff. And she...
I gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, she gave us great healing. It's all on the website that I have on Starwater Press. I have another one called Starwater Press.
I know. I'll put that in the chat room. So do you have your three books on that site?
Yeah, Starwater Press. They're all on Starwater Press, but they're on Hopeful Healer, too, along the top, you know. So, but Stillwater Press is the hub of some of that stuff, you know?
I was just wondering, now, are any of these books on Kindle?
Yes, yeah, all of them except the latest, and the latest will be.
Yeah.
But yes, they're all on Kindle, and they're on Nook.
Although you
they're
said
on
Kindle's
most
little...
of the platforms, and they are in paperback as well.
Let's see. Star Water Press.
Yes, starwater.com. Starwater.com is all it is. That's the website. I've had
that
again. From 1987.
Mm-hmm. I put in Star Waters Press.
That no, not S, just Star Water Press. You'll see it if you do just Star Water Press. Stars in the heaven, water in the earth. Starwater.com.
Starwaterpress.com?
No, no, not press. Just starwater.com.
Now I'll try this again.
Yeah, try it again. Starwater.com.
Gotcha.
You know, and see how that is.
Yeah, this will work.
Great.
Yay!
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and that's where one of the angels, Roshanna's Magic Garden, she's going to do growing yourself in the Garden of One and all the healing imagery, because she reframes with pictures, you know.
Oh, that's very pretty, this site.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Very nice, very nice.
She's busy doing beautiful, you know. that's nice anyway. Hey, Kate,
yeah.
I think we're good.
I think so. We have just a few minutes left. Do you have any other... You would like to see more nurses write is what I'm gathering.
I would. It's not Starwater Press, by the way. You got to get rid of that one, you know, because it won't come up under Starwater Press, you know. Yes, I would like to have them tell their stories because I know they need to tell them because they write them on the forums. But what they need to do is they need to tell them in a way that it helps educate patients. And if they need to tell them and not be afraid, they can send them to any of my sites anonymously, and I will post them for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it would be fun to be a mentor for nurses who want to write. That would be
right?
fun.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
I'm trying to put together a couple of programs, but we can do that. That's not.
Yeah, that would be fun because I think everybody has a story and everybody has a vision. Apparently, when they do these surveys, people, almost 90% or more of Americans believe they have a book that they need to write. Well, that would probably be true among nurses as well. So,
probably more stories. The fact is that what they have to know in truth is that it probably pays not as much as nursing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Long run, but they do have to, you know, like Chicken Soup for the Soul. Well,
yeah.
They really need to get together and put together some stories, because they have a lot to teach, they have a lot to say, they have a lot to contribute, and rather than burn out, there are still ways they can help and heal.
That's right. Well, Carol, thank you so much for coming on the program this evening. I totally enjoyed it, and I appreciate it very much.
And I appreciate what you do and your prayers and stuff, and your site is wonderful, too. So
let's get
more nurses out there so that we're less invisible, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We will work on that, Carol.
That
would be great.
Yeah, so I'm going to play music for mother and child, and have a wonderful evening in
you
Texas.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
See you soon.
Peace to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.